This weekend starts right after this.
Do you own or rent your home? Sure you do. Fortunately, Geico makes it easy to bundle your home and car insurance. It's a good thing, too, because having a home is hard work. Go to geico.com, get a quote, and see how much you could save. Geico.com. Easy.
From Compass Media Networks, this is America's First News. This weekend, with your host, Gordon Deal.
Maximizing your time. I'm Gordon Deal with Jennifer Koschenka. Thanks for spending part of your weekend with us. Here's what's coming up this hour.
As we head toward the new year, a list of things you should stop wasting time on.
Beer, bikinis, and barking dogs. A look at the bizarre things that show up during virtual court hearings.
Are you done with this year? We'll have a list of symbolic ways that people are saying good riddance to 2020 with fire.
And if a goal for 2021 is to find a mate, we'll have a list of the best and worst cities for singles.
So this year for 2020, Madison, Wisconsin actually ranked number one just in terms of dating opportunities, in terms of fun and recreation, and the dating economics there as well.
Jill Gonzalez at Wallet Hub on the best and worst cities for singles. Well, what is it like to be a full-time swabber during a pandemic, taking as many as 200 samples per day, all day, every day? Insight from Kay Lazar, reporter at the Boston Globe. Kay, first off, what did you take away after talking with these folks?
How incredibly caring and patient these people are. You can imagine having actually been in a line waiting for these tests and how frustrated people get. And yet they, to a one, were just so incredibly patient and really committed to what they were doing, which, you know, after 10 months really is admirable.
I presume some of them could use a good laugh. And it was funny in your story, you said sometimes they see these folks grimace at a nasal swab, and here they are with multiple tattoos in which they've had needle punctures all over the place.
I thought that was pretty ironic, them talking about, you know, people being a little queasy about having a nasal swab. Yes, it may go a little deep into the nose, but after needles, that would seem to be pretty tame. The other thing that really struck me was Karina Mendoza, one of the swabbers in East Boston, was saying, you know, she's pretty relatively new nurse, and she was said, you know, it really gave me a chance to look up close and personal at people's faces. And it's amazing how many people have such beautiful eyes. I was taken by that.
I'm sure they tell stories with their eyes, too, as she's conducting the test.
Oh, yes. I mean, some of them, as she said, they keep them wide open and they're just afraid. And, you know, it's just trying to talk to them and keep them, you know, calm. One of the swabbers told me about one of her colleagues who encountered someone, a youngster who was actually a young teen who was really just very, very frightened and was just really, I mean, to the point of petrified. And she just took the time to sit down, you know, quietly with a person and just try and talk to him and calm him down, which I thought was, you know, obviously they probably get this over and over and over again.
Yeah. Something they might not be taught, right? That sometimes with some of those folks, I feel like it just comes naturally. Like, let me just take a moment. Did you say, too, that they're using shorter swabs in some cases now?
Yes, in East Boston, it's not what they call the brain ticklers, the deep nasal swab that goes all the way back to the back of the throat. It's, you know, closer in, or the middle ones that aren't nearly as deep. So I think people don't realize that and they're afraid. I mean, it doesn't take very long. It's 10 seconds, which may seem like an eternity. But yes, that definitely helps with the fear factor, for sure.
Yeah. We're speaking with Kay Lazar, reporter at the Boston Globe. She's written a piece entitled, As COVID-19 Surges, Swabbers Carry On and On and On. The woman you talked to, the Karina Mendoza, the young nurse, did she take a guess at how many swabs she's taken over the past few months?
I asked her that because, you know, she usually does a morning shift of three and a half hours a break and another 3.5. And she said, you know, I average about 60 to 100 swabs, you know, a shift. So, you know, you're looking at 120 to 200 swabs a day over months. I mean, it's thousands. And, you know, all she, I had to smile that she said, you know, what I said, what's going through your mind, you know, after person after person? And she said, just don't drop the swab.
Oh, geez, right. Do I have to do it all over again, in other words?
Well, and for these poor people? Someone through that again, right?
Yeah.
And to this date, she has not. But I thought that was kind of funny that after all that, that, you know, that she's worried about dropping one. But you can see being on the receiving end, you wouldn't want to have to do that twice.
Right. How about, I know you spoke to Kelly Hennessy. She's the director of testing there. What's her take on all this?
Well, I mean, obviously they were happy to be there for everyone. But, you know, I did say to them, it's only human. You see all these people, after, you know, for Thanksgiving swarming your place. You have thousands of people, and yet you're just staying put. And, you know, I think they are being patient, but they are also hopeful. As one of them said when they walked me out that day, can you just put in big letters at the end of the story, please wear a mask?
Mm.
Yeah.
Do they find that they often have to bite their tongue if somebody comes in and says, yeah, I need a test because I'm going to a huge party indoors Friday night or something?
Yes. I mean, they're not there to lecture or anything, but they do wish people would follow the guidelines, you know, and obviously now with another big holiday days away and the lines getting longer, it's tempting to tell people, you know, please just stay home. But that's not their place. Their place is to obviously calm people, take a good test, take a good swab, and hope for the best.
Thanks, Kay. Kay Lazar, reporter at the Boston Globe. When you call a Dell Technologies advisor, you're talking to someone who isn't waiting for their turn to speak, but who actually wants to hear what you have to say. They're focused on you, ready to give advice on everything from laptops to the cloud, and offer tailored solutions powered by Intel vPro platform to keep your small business ready for what's next. Our advisors listen, so you know your small business needs have been heard. Call a Dell Technologies advisor today at 877-ASK-DELL. That's 877-ASK-DELL. Offices across the country responded to this summer's racial justice protests after the police killing of George Floyd in Minneapolis on Memorial Day with an unprecedented wave of diversity and anti-racism training. Half a year later, workers of color are taking stock of the results. Krithika Varagur, columnist at the Wall Street Journal, says it's a mixed bag. Krithika, what have you found?
Well, you know, in part it was an inquiry into what happened after the wave of corporate initiatives that were announced over the summer after the police killing of George Floyd. And we saw this kind of unprecedented move across every single industry, making commitments to diversity training and anti-racism. But then as the summer turned to fall, we kind of stopped hearing about it. So I kind of followed up and talked to workers of color about how they were faring and found that, you know, as I said, some people had seen concrete changes in their workplace, and other people said it had kind of fallen off and it seemed a little bit more performative.
All right. So is it easy to figure out why certain programs were successful and why some were not?
Yeah, I think if the initiatives were matched to kind of concrete goalposts, like, for example, creating a hiring pipeline for more diverse talent, or like looking at issues within the hiring process, for example, or making, you know, setting some kind of internal goal to work with more diverse contractors, if you're a business that deals with consultants and contractors, all those kinds of things work. I think workplaces that made an ongoing concern, you know, either had a diversity task force or delegated responsibility to some people to keep the momentum going, had better outcomes than people who maybe hired a consultant to do one training over the summer and never talked about it again.
Mm, interesting. All right. So I think you said, too, those consultants business kind of fell off at one point and then all of a sudden came roaring back.
Yeah. One of the people I spoke to said this year was like a roller coaster, which I think was a good way to put it. Basically, when COVID hit the U.S., the first wave in March, diversity and inclusion was among the first jobs to be eliminated in a lot of companies, and a lot of independent consultants lost their work. And then suddenly after George Floyd was killed and these protests started across the nation, it was like whiplash, and they were very much in demand again. And many say that the demand hasn't really fallen off, and this has just been a crazy year since June.
Hmm. We're speaking with Krithika Varagur. She writes the At Work column for the Wall Street Journal. Her piece is called The Unfinished Business of Office Diversity Training. Does it make a difference, I guess, when it comes to the bottom line for companies that stick with this?
There's increasingly something like a business case for diversity. A bunch of papers from, you know, from consulting firms like McKinsey and Bain and so on have shown that diversity in both executive leadership and in the workforce is, you know, is leading to higher bottom line, higher innovation revenue, things like that. So, yeah, there's a good case for it, but where there's fewer statistics is how exactly to best go about doing this. And that's one of the challenges I talk about in my piece, is that it's an emerging field, it's an imperfect science, and although a lot of workplaces nominally committed to doing this over the summer, no one's really quite sure the best way to do it.
Hmm. It seems like mentorships were at least playing a somewhat important role.
Yeah, that's one of the more concrete interventions that research and a lot of practitioners have recommended. It's a concrete way to get people of color up into the hiring pool and also to help them succeed inside the workplace once they're there. And it's linked to a whole bunch of positive effects, including higher compensation in your salary, higher satisfaction at work, and, you know, just across the board, it seems like one of the interventions that most can make this commitment real.
What's another concrete one that folks like to point to?
I think setting those concrete goals for hiring and contractors is another one, or just setting like specific goals based on what your industry is. So if you're publishing, maybe you might set a goalpost for the number of diverse authors you would want to publish that would reflect your company's goals. The architecture firm I spoke to had concrete goals for hiring more Black and minority contractors to reflect their business values. So, you know, it depends on what your firm is, but it can really come at any sector of your work.
Thanks, Krithika. Krithika Varagor, columnist at The Wall Street Journal. Steve Jobs used to talk about how much time and energy we waste picking out clothes every day. That's especially true in the work-from-home era that we're in now. But just because a suit's not required doesn't mean you want to get so casual you look like you just rolled out of bed. Cuts Clothing has the perfect answer. You don't need to choose your outfit. Just throw on a Cuts shirt or polo, some pants, and you look professional and feel amazingly comfortable. The quality you need for business, the comfort you want for anything else, home or away. And for winter, their new hoodies made with custom Hyperloop French Terry fabric are essential. They spent 4 years getting them just right. I love that they're soft, comfortable, warm, and made for the long haul. Try one on. You'll be a Cuts Clothing customer for life. Cuts is loved by your favorite athletes, entrepreneurs, and even podcast hosts. Seems like everyone is wearing Cuts these days. Get 15% off your first order by going to cutsclothing.com/Gordon. That's cutsclothing.com/Gordon for 15% off, the only shirt worth wearing. cutsclothing.com/Gordon.
Thanks for spending part of your weekend with us. Are you single and looking? Maybe a strategy would be to determine which city is the best for finding a mate and which ones are not. Here's this weekend's Jennifer Koshenka.
With about 45% of U.S. adults being single and dating opportunities restricted during the pandemic, personal finance website Wallet Hub is out with its best and worst cities for singles. Here with details, Jill Gonzalez of Wallet Hub. Jill, what kinds of indicators did you use to measure the cities?
Well, we looked at almost 200 of the biggest U.S. cities. That data set ranges from the state of the population that is single to the number of online dating opportunities now more than ever, to walkability and parks and recreation places. I mean, we definitely had to change it up a little bit for 2020.
What were some of the changes that you did have to make then?
So again, focusing more on online dating opportunities and open space dates, parks and recreation, since so many things are kind of closing and opening more than others.
All right, Jill, who is number one?
So this year for 2020, Madison, Wisconsin actually ranked number one just in terms of dating opportunities, in terms of fun and recreation, and the dating economics there as well, followed by Atlanta at number two and Denver at number three.
Did Madison benefit by having a university there, Wisconsin? Does that bring in a lot of extra singles?
Absolutely, yes. So it's a bit of a younger city, so that certainly helps, and more of a single city, obviously, which is going to be helpful here as well.
Who are some of the worst cities that you looked at?
So some of the worst cities for singles, which means they're probably some of the best cities for people who are already settled down, include Pembroke Pines in Florida, Brownsville, Texas, Glendale, California, Winston-Salem, North Carolina.
We're speaking with Jill Gonzalez of Wallet Hub about some of the best cities and worst cities for singles. You measured things like a share of single people and found that Detroit had the highest share. How did that compare to the lowest?
Absolutely. So in terms of the highest percent of singles, Detroit By and far had the most. That's twice as many as there are in, say, Fremont, California, or Gilbert, Arizona, where, again, people skew a little bit older and skew much more settled down.
You also took a look at things like the cost of a two-person meal. Where did you find that was expensive and not so expensive?
The lowest restaurant meal costs were in El Paso, Texas, in Glendale, Arizona, in Cheyenne, Wyoming. The highest restaurant meal costs, five times higher, in much bigger cities like Scottsdale, Arizona, Washington, D.C., and San Francisco.
You also did the same with wine. What did you find there?
Yes, so wine has been increasing in price actually since the start of the pandemic, but you can still see cheaper beer and wine in the South, the Gulfport, Mississippi, Durham, North Carolina, Indianapolis, still very expensive in places like New York and Seattle.
That's this weekend's Jennifer Koschenka with analyst Jill Gonzalez from Wallet Hub. 30 minutes now after the hour. On This Weekend. Today, I'm here with Josh Hunt, Executive VP and Chief Business Development Officer at the Michigan Economic Development Corporation. Josh, if I wanted to start a new business, what is it that makes Michigan so attractive?
Yeah, if you want to start a business in Michigan, we have unbelievable assets here in Michigan for our entrepreneurial community as well, in terms of opportunities for growth through access to capital, services, great universities, and a talented workforce that can grow through those startup businesses here in Michigan. We've seen examples of companies grow from an idea to over $1 billion valuation, companies like Duo Security and others that have grown here through the strong ecosystem of support that we have for high-tech startups here in the state.
To hear more of this interview with Josh Hunt from the Michigan Economic Development Corporation, go to thismorningwithgordondeal.com and click on the MEDC microphone. That's thismorningwithgordondeal.com and click on the MEDC microphone.
Thanks for spending part of your weekend with us, Gordon Deal with Jennifer Koschenka. Coming up this half hour, smart ways to spend your remaining FSA dollars. Also, things we waste precious time on. Plus, nudity, beer, bikinis, and barking dogs in today's virtual court hearings. And one way to say good riddance to 2020, burn stuff in a bonfire. We'll have that story in about 20 minutes. Well, with an estimated 41% of U.S. adults avoiding medical care because of COVID-19, flexible spending accounts haven't been depleted the way they usually are by the end of the year. If you're not in need of medical care or don't feel comfortable going into certain doctor's offices, there are still a number of smart ways to spend your FSA monies. Here are some suggestions from Katie Hill, executive editor at Millie. Katie, help us out.
Yeah, well, a lot of people have been avoiding medical care because of coronavirus, obviously. You don't feel like going in the doctor's office. So that means that your FSA money might be sitting there. And for many of us, you know, it's use it or lose it. You got to spend it. There might be some amount that carries over. It's a $550 max that you can move over, but not every plan does that. So anyway, this is use it or lose it. Don't let it sit there. Don't waste it. So I looked at things that you know, I think people know what they can, a lot of the obvious things they can spend their FSA money on, but these are a little less obvious things.
All right. So some of these are simple. You snatch them off a store shelf. Others, not as much, because you might need at least a doctor's note or permission of some kind.
Yes, a lot of them do. So something like acupuncture, right? You're going to need a letter of medical necessity. So if you have, whatever, a migraine or chronic pain or arthritis. However, look, you can. There's a lot of telemedicine going on. So if you do feel really uncomfortable going into a doctor's office, you could do telemedicine for your doctor and still obtain that letter of medical necessity in some cases. So think of it like that. But yeah, I mean, so acupuncture is one, you're going to need that. Weight loss, too, if your doctor deems it necessary for you to lose weight, you can spend your FSA money on a lot of weight loss programs and memberships. Like Weight Watchers, a big popular one, like you could do that. Again, though, your doctor needs to tell you that you can do that.
Okay. Emergency preparedness falls under flexible spending account spending as well?
Some first aid and survival kits may qualify. Amazon actually has a little store for eligible FSA and HSA items. Some of them are $10, some of them are more than $100, but they do have a little store on Amazon, which is kind of a hidden little secret that shows you what's eligible for that.
Wow. And I saw to pillows and mattresses. I mean, again, you know, tied to health, to either directly or indirectly, depending on your needs.
Yes, if they're for allergy prevention, right? Okay. So allergy aids like pillows or mattresses or even vacuum cleaners. Like if you have really bad allergies, again, though, you're probably going to need a statement from your healthcare provider. But if you have bad allergies and you need something like this, this could be qualify for FSA money.
Wow. We're speaking with Katie Hill, executive editor at Millie. They've got a piece running about smart ways to spend your remaining FSA dollars. What else stood out here?
Massage devices. I mean, I feel like we've all been sitting in our uncomfortable desk chairs at home, right? Again, you're going to need the doctor's note to use it for that. But if you have if you have really bad issues where you're in pain, the doctor may write you a note for that, and you could use FSA funds. And family planning too, right? Pregnancy, fertility kits, if you're planning to start a family, prenatal vitamins could be covered. Those are some interesting things. And then sunscreen. This is what, you know, let's say you're down to your last, you know, $25. Well, get some sunscreen for the summer, right? That one you can use FSA money for as well.
Ancestry and DNA kits?
Yeah, again, like, it depends on, like, if the doctor's like, oh, you need this. This depends on the scope of your health and what services are desired. It's a little more complicated than that. But, yes, sometimes those can qualify.
Even some of the teeth straightening stuff, too, which I didn't realize.
Yeah. And those are, by the way, there's some Invisalign, Smile Direct Club, right? Those qualify. And a lot of them have at-home kits where you can pop in a mold of your teeth and get kits that way. So if you don't want to go into the doctor for that, you can do it that way.
Thanks, Katie. Katie Hill, executive editor at Millie. Glad you could spend part of your weekend with us. Our most precious resource is time. Jonathan Clements at HumbleDollar.com says, unless we're at death's door, none of us knows how much time we have, but we all know it's limited. He says his preoccupation with time and its dwindling supply has grown as he's grown older. And he's compiled a list of things that he suggests we stop wasting time on. Jonathan, deep stuff.
So as we grow older, obviously the amount of time we have available to us is increasingly limited. And therefore becomes more precious. You know, early in our adult lives, money seems like it's really the scarce resource, but as you get older, it's time that becomes the thing that we prize the most. At age almost 58, you know, my goal is to make the most of the time that I have, and that includes avoiding a lot of things that waste my time.
All right, so some of those things are what?
Well, one of the things that I hate probably more than anything else is standing in line. It's the biggest colossal waste of time. I mean, sometimes you have to do it. You have to do it when you go through airport security. You have to do it when you go to the Department of Motor Vehicles. But these days, I see a lot of people standing in line out of choice. They're standing in line in front of the Whole Foods. They're standing in line at Trader Joe's. Near me, they're standing in line in front of the liquor store. I don't care how thirsty you are. I'm not standing in line for anything.
That's a fair point. What was the point you made about fixing problems quickly?
So one of the things that I find, it's definitely a mistake I make, is that I'll start on a project. Maybe I'm painting a room. You know, maybe I'm tidying up the basement, whatever it is. And then I'll say, I want to take a break, and I'll go off and do something else. And that might seem like the easy solution, but the problem is when you go back and restart the project, you're chewing up precious time. So my goal is to try to get things done as quickly as possible and in one fell swoop so I don't end up wasting time thinking about them and thinking and also stopping and then restarting.
What was your point about don't buy trouble?
So this is a big one. A lot of people dream of a second home. They want the house at the shore. They want the house in the mountains. And they buy that weekend getaway because it just seems so appealing. But the problem is when you buy that weekend getaway, what you're really doing is buying yourself a whole bunch of trouble. Think about it. Every weekend you've got to drive to the place and drive back. So now you're spending time in traffic. Once you get there, you got all these chores you got to do. You got to maintain the place. You got to clean the place. Occasionally, there will be major repairs. All of these things chew up time. In my book, having one house is bad enough. That's a big time suck. And now you've just doubled down on the problem. So I'd say to people, think really, really hard about buying that second home. And don't think about how great, relaxing it's going to be when you get there. Think about all the problems you're going to have to deal with once you arrive.
We're speaking with Jonathan Clements. He's the founder and editor of HumbleDollar.com, and he's written a piece this time called Time Limited, and he's listed a series of ways he'd like to avoid wasting time. How about lose the losers?
So we all have people in our life who we consider to be friends, who actually get far more from us than we get from them. These are people who, you know, never pick up the tab when you go out to dinner. So, of course, we don't do much of that these days. These are the people who, you know, when you talk to them, all they do is talk about themselves. Essentially, what they're doing is sucking the vitality out of you. You know, as I get older and time becomes more limited, I try really hard to shed myself of these so-called friends. And instead, if I'm going to spend my precious time doing anything, I'm going to spend it with the people I really, really like.
Yeah. How about searching less? What did you mean by that?
So this is one that's brought on by the internet. We can sit at our computers and spend endless hours searching for the perfect toaster. You can go to multiple sites, compare prices, compare features, and so on. And I say, you know, is it really worth it? Yeah, you know, if you spend 10 minutes, the toaster that you end up buying may not be the perfect toaster. But is it really worth spending another hour? Are you really going to get something that much better? I'd rather take that hour and do something else with it.
Thanks, Jonathan. Jonathan Clements, founder and editor of HumbleDollar.com. When you call a Dell Technologies advisor, you're talking to someone who isn't waiting for their turn to speak, but who actually wants to hear what you have to say. They're focused on you, ready to give advice on everything from laptops to the cloud, and offer tailored solutions powered by Intel vPro platform to keep your small business ready for what's next. Our advisors listen, so you know your small business needs have been heard. Call a Dell Technologies advisor today at 877-ASK-DELL. That's 877-ASK-DELL.
Innovation, resilience, agility. It's how Michigan businesses continue to build the future. Our expertise, talented workforce, and proven adaptability are making a difference now and shaping the future. Join us and make your mark where it matters. Visit michiganbusiness.org/radio to put your plans in motion. That's michiganbusiness.org/radio.
Well, with the coronavirus pandemic raging, courthouses across the nation have gone to virtual hearings conducted over the internet, sometimes with hilarious results. Andy Wolfson, reporter at the Louisville Courier-Journal, is here with examples. Andy, what did you find?
I found that, especially early on, a lot of times lawyers and their clients were not really ready for prime time in terms of their appearance and dress in these Zoom court hearings.
Did lawyers not brief the clients in some cases? And actually, in a couple of cases, it seemed like the lawyers didn't even brief themselves.
I'm not sure what advice they gave their clients, but one lawyer said her client appeared in a bikini at poolside for her hearing, and the lawyer said that this client is now a former client.
Anybody explain some kind of thought process as to why somebody would appear in a bikini poolside for a court hearing? Is that a protest of some kind?
No, I think it's just because they could.
Wow. And there was another woman who, I guess, paraded around naked, perhaps unknowingly?
I know of at least two. I think they were both defendants, or at least they were litigants. They both appeared naked.
Jeez. And then what else did you encounter here? What else raised your eyebrows as you were hearing these stories?
I think I was surprised some of the lawyers were drinking alcohol during hearings. One of them was smoking a cigar, although the judge in that case said she thought that was great.
The judge thought it was great?
Yeah, the judge had no issues with the lawyer lighting up, since it wasn't in the courthouse.
Oh, my goodness. We're speaking with Andy Wolfson, reporter at the Louisville Courier-Journal. He's written a funny piece entitled Virtual Court Hearings in 2020 Have It All, Nudity, Beer, Bikinis, and Barking Dogs. What about, like, the headline suggests there, the barking dogs?
Well, I think we've all experienced that in remote meetings and hearings. I've had my dog wander into to several.
Yeah, me too. There were some cases, though, where it seemed like the virtual court hearings were productive.
Yeah, one of the judges who handles mental health hearings, including mental health inquests, said that parties with mental issues were more comfortable appearing remotely so that they didn't have to go to the courthouse and appear in front of strangers. And this judge said she might try to continue this after the pandemic is over.
Wow. What else stood out as you were pulling all this together?
Well, the first remote hearing I wrote about back in the spring, a judge repeatedly muted a criminal defense attorney for as long as 7 minutes at a time because she didn't like what he was saying. And he tried to get her thrown off the case by the state Supreme Court and was not successful. But I think criminal defense lawyers say that these remote hearings do not satisfy the Sixth Amendment requirement to allow defendants to confront witnesses against them.
Thanks, Andy. Andy Wolfson, reporter at the Louisville Courier-Journal. Lots of people can't wait to say goodbye to 2020, right? Some are planning a flaming farewell. The Wall Street Journal says it's a thing this year. 53-year-old Annalise Place and her daughter will be tossing their unused date books into a backyard fire on New Year's Eve. They've already started burning their 2020 calendars. 48-year-old San Francisco sales director Christopher King plans to go down to Ocean Beach on New Year's Day to burn slips of notebook paper onto which he has written the memories and habits he doesn't want to take into 2021. Additional rituals, Lindsay Dannis, a writer in Kingston, New York, is leaving an entire part of herself in 2020, her hair. She says she's planning a ritual buzz for New Year's Eve to close out what she calls this hellscape year and enter the new year feeling confident and empowered. Others are taking a more spiritual approach. Morgan Kennedy, for instance, plans to channel Latin American witchcraft to perform a New Year's Eve cleansing ritual involving sage and healing crystals. She'll get in the bath and hold the stones with the expectation that the crystals and bathwater will absorb 2020's negative energy. That'll do it for this hour. For Jennifer Koshenka, I'm Gordon Deal. Thanks for listening to This Weekend. Do you own or rent your home? Sure you do. Fortunately, Geico makes it easy to bundle your home and car insurance. It's a good thing, too, because having a home is hard work. Go to geico.com, get a quote, and see how much you could save. Geico.com. Easy.